My name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on another book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 52. I'm recording it on Tuesday, December 2nd, 2008. The PE 10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Love is the Answer. Something I do in all of the writing that I do in the investing field and in the podcast that I record dealing with investing is focus on emotions over numbers. I argue that emotions trump numbers. 70% of the investing project is getting the emotions right. I argue that if you get the emotions right, you'll be able to figure out the intellectual side of stock investing with ease. But many people feel intimidated. Many people feel that they're just not smart enough to figure out how stock investing works. They're not smart enough to have confidence in their strategies. They're not smart enough to know what to do. Many people, especially today, after this stock crash, people are saying, what should I do? I just don't know where to turn. And I believe that all of those problems can be solved, but the trouble is we're looking for the answers in the wrong place. People are trying to solve those problems. What many people do that are confused today is they turn to the experts. The experts are the people that let us down in the first place. The experts are the people who caused this stock crash. I call this the passive investing stock crash of 2008. Well, guess who urged us to follow a passive investing strategy? It's the quote-unquote experts. So the experts caused this stock crash with their bad advice, the bad advice they've been giving for 20, 30 years now. So we're not going to get the answers by turning again to the experts. The experts certainly have much to offer, and we talk about good things that the experts have to offer all the time at PassionSaving.com. But the experts cannot be relied on, just across the board. You can't just take things that investing experts tell you and apply them in your own strategies, or you're going to find yourself in trouble. We need to be a little more independent. We need independent-minded. We need to think things through a little more carefully than that. And the big problem that the experts have is that what they know about stock investing tends to be on the intellectual side. They've read a lot of books. They've attended a lot of courses. They have a lot of experience. But they're not as strong on the emotional side because that's not the side of investing that has been emphasized in recent decades. And so if you want to rise above the conventional advice, if you want to really know what's going on in stock investing, if you want to have confidence in your strategies, you have to stop digging in the same place you've been digging for the past 20 or 30 years. Stop trying to master the intellectual fine points, which probably account for only 30% of investing success. Turn your attention to the emotional side. And I came up with a phrase. I think about these things when I'm drifting off to sleep at night or in the shower or if I go for a walk or a run. And I came up with this title, Love is the Answer. There's another phrase. I think it came about as the result of another phrase I use in posts that I put to discussion boards. I sometimes say, hate is not a sound long-term investing strategy. I'm sure of it. Because I use that phrase when I see passive investing dogmatists respond with anger to people who point out the flaws in their reasoning or in their strategies or in their solutions or in their findings. And I didn't want to do a podcast with a negative title. I prefer, when possible, to take the positive path. So turning that around, you come to a phrase, love is the answer. Love is the answer to our investing troubles of today. So both on a global scale, you know, this stock crash affects not only individual investors, it doesn't only affect you and me and all the other middle-class investors, it affects our society as a whole. We're going through a recession that has been brought on by the crash in stock prices. And of course, ultimately was brought on by the rise in stock prices, the insane bull market we saw in the 1990s. This is the ultimate effect of that. So the answer both to those social problems and to the individual portfolio problem that you're probably suffering from, if you're like most of the rest of us, the answer is love. And I don't mean in a gooey sense, but love is a real thing. Love is a practical thing. That's one of the messages that I strive to get across. You know, I call the approach to investing that I recommend rational investing. And one downside of that title is it might lead people to believe that I'm advocating an intellectual approach because we think of reasoning as being an intellectual exercise. I don't really think that's right. Somebody who sits in a room and thinks grand thoughts and never gets out in the world and never touches people and never loves, never cares about his work, his or her work. I would question whether that person is rational in a true, full sense. The person is rationalizing, perhaps. But to be rational means to accept life as it is. And life is comprised not only of intellectual understanding, intellectual reasoning. It is also comprised of caring. It's also comprised of emotions. And so the truly rational person does think, certainly, does think and try to solve problems through thought and through logic. But the truly rational person also cares, and the truly rational person also feels. It's part of life. And the problem with the passive investing model, the problem with the conventional investing wisdom of today, is that it is overly rational, you could say, or it's actually rationalizing. It's overly intellectual. It's too focused on adding up the numbers and ignores the emotional side of the question and thus fails because it is not rooted in reality. Reality is not just intellectualizing. Reality is in large part emotional. Emotions matter. Valuations matter. I say that all the time. Well, all that valuations are human emotions. It's human emotions that cause overvaluation in the stock market and undervaluation in the stock market. So what we need to do to become better investors is to shift our focus from the intellectual side to the emotional side. And so I thought I would do a podcast focusing just on love and how letting love be your guide to your investing decisions can make you a far more effective investor than you've ever been in the past. Love helps us to do everything that we try to do in life. Love helps us to perform our jobs. Love helps us to build our families. Love helps us to overcome obstacles placed in our path when we are trying to, you know, achieve success in life. It strikes people as strange to say that love could help us become a better investor. But it shouldn't. That the very fact that it strikes us as strange to talk about love in the investing realm is part of the problem that we're trying to overcome. We need to talk about love. And the title popped into my head. And, you know, I had the same reaction that I think anyone else would have to it. Oh, that's a strange title for an investing podcast. And then I thought, you know, that's what makes it a good title for an investing podcast, because I don't want to spend my time creating podcasts that others have already created. What, you know, what purpose is served? I could do a podcast on the Sharpe ratio, you know. And there's someone else out there who is better qualified than I am to do a podcast on the Sharpe ratio. So, you know, let that person do that podcast. But I like to think that I have some insight to offer on this emotional side of investing. So when that title popped into my head, I thought, this is a podcast that I should do. Now, so I have 18 or 19 items here that just relate to how love plays a role in the process of choosing an investing strategy. And one point that I scribbled down, I say here, love is rooted in suffering. And that's a paradoxical idea, but it's a true idea. I looked up the word. The first book that I wrote, the book on saving, the title of it is Passion Saving. And I spend a long time thinking about titles, probably too long. And when I was doing that, before I made a final decision to stick with that title, I just looked up the words in the dictionary. You know, I know what passion means and I know what saving means, but I looked them up because sometimes you get a fresh perspective by going back to the dictionary and seeing what the words mean in a strict formal sense. And the first definition to the word passion was long suffering. And I don't know why that's the first definition. It struck me as strange. I don't think of, you know, we think of passion. We tend to think of it as, you know, romance. And yet the first definition was long-suffering, and I presume it was a reference to the passion of Jesus, you know, when he was hung on the cross. We refer to that as Christ's passion, his long-suffering. How that got crossed up with the idea of romance in modern day, but I have a guess, which could be totally wrong, and if it is wrong, I hope someone will let me know, but I wonder if there's a sense in which passion does mean long-suffering, because what a passion is an intense emotion. And so when we talk about a romance, you know, when we talk about falling in love, why is it that we are quote unquote passionate? What makes us passionate? And you could say, oh, we're happy, you know, or, you know, it's just fun. It's fun to be in love. But passion is really something more than that. And I think part of what's going on is that we have a quest for love. We have a desire for love. And when we achieve it, it's almost as if there is a period of long suffering that comes to an end. In other words, that within us all, we have this quest for connection with another person, another human, and integration, and to be understood, to be appreciated, to, you know, for affection, for warmth, for comfort. And the time that we're without love is, you know, it might be overly dramatic to describe it as suffering, but it is sort of a low grade suffering. And when we meet this person who is going to bring love into our life, who we hope is going to bring love into our life, we are experiencing the good side of long suffering. Our suffering comes to an end, and of course it feels good. That's just a theory that I have about how those words are connected, and it could be totally off base, but it's when I looked that word up and saw that the first definition was long suffering, that thought came into my head. But if you think about it along these lines, if you think about love, you know, passion is not the same thing as love, but they're related concepts. Love is long suffering. Love is a good thing. It's a positive thing. It is fun. It does make us happy. But love always makes us vulnerable. To love someone is to be vulnerable to having that love taken away. That's always true. Anything that you love can cause you pain. whether it's a person or a thing. If you love your car, I knew a man. There was a man in my neighborhood one time, and he had bought a new car, and I think he was parking it, and he scraped a fence, a metal fence. And there was this, scratch down his car, and I was in bed, and I could just, the windows were open. It was summer, and this was before the days of air conditioning, and I just heard him out there, and he was just in agony that his car had this, this nasty scratch on it, his new car. Well, he loved the car. That's why it hurt. If I had a scratch in my car, it would hardly make any difference in my day. I just don't care about those things, so it wouldn't have much mattered. But because he loved it. And if you love a person, you care about that person. You don't want to lose that person. If you love your work, you want your work to be quality. You want to succeed at your work. I think it helps to think about investing in these terms. Investing has, I am saying that you need to bring love to the investing project. You need to care. And I don't mean that you need to make money your God. I certainly don't mean that. What really should be your God, so to speak, is the things that investing effectively can add to your life. By investing effectively, you can retire sooner and be able to spend your remaining days doing what you most want to do. You could, by investing effectively, you might be able to send your son or daughter to college. You might be able to buy a bigger home. Those are the things that you should care about and love. And the investing project is going to involve some level of suffering. And of course, we're going through that today. We're going through a time of suffering. And I think that one of the failings of the conventional advice is that we don't prepare people for this. When, people talk, the conventional advisors, they talk about price drops. They talk about it all the time. But they talk about it in this artificial, removed way. And it doesn't click with people. It's not real. And the feelings are real. When we go through it, the feelings are real. And that's why people don't stick with their plan. Because they are not prepared. They're not prepared for the emotional turmoil. And so what I say is that we need a new model of understanding how investing works that has room for discussion of these sorts of things. Investing does involve suffering, not pointless suffering. The suffering does have a purpose. The suffering can bring us to a higher level of understanding. I believe that the suffering we're going through today could bring in a golden age of investing. It could, if we take it in the right spirit, the suffering we are going through today will lead to the rejection of the passive investing model and to a desire for a new model, which I believe will be the rational investing model. And So out of that suffering can come something very good. I believe that rational investing beats passive investing in every possible way. There's no comparison. So it could usher in the golden age of middle class investing. If the suffering opens our minds to what we've done wrong, and you see, that's the key, that in theory, we could have learned what we had gotten wrong without the suffering. But of course, in real life, it doesn't happen that way. In real life, people who love deeply are people who have suffered. Because suffering makes you aware of the beauty of life. Whereas having too much causes ingratitude, causes an attitude of indifference almost to beauty. So those are some thoughts to ponder on the value of suffering, and I think we all need to be thinking about what good can come from suffering when we're living through a period like we are living through today. Love is not the third point here I wanted to bring up. Love is not a solo act. Love always involves other people. There's a line in a Bob Dylan song. Is it called Lonesome Day Blues? And I'm sure he probably took the line from some old blues song, but he says, you're going to need my help, sweetheart. You can't make love all by yourself. Love involves other people. I think much of our investing advice, the conventional advice, is, I'm tempted to say here, it's masturbatory. But, you know, the point there is it's a solo act. It's all about living in your head, coming up with these theories, and these tables of numbers. And they all sound so grand, and they all sound so impressive when they've got that stamp of approval, you know, approved by investing experts everywhere. But they don't take it out into the real world, and they don't see how it plays among real live human beings. And I find that offensive. And that's why I'm such a big believer in discussion boards. You go to investing discussion boards and you can hear how people take these theories and how they apply them. And what you find is that many of them either don't apply them in the way they're intended to be applied, which means they can't work. You know, you hear that all the time. And the answer you'll get sometimes from the people defending the theories is, well, that's not a valid criticism. The theory would have worked if only people had applied it. Well, if people can't apply it, what good is it? You know, if there's one person who can't apply it, then I certainly agree. It's not a fair criticism. But the type of thing I'm talking about are some of these theories can't be applied by hardly anybody. So what good are they? They're masturbatory. Love always involves other people. So one of the things I stress in all of my work in the investing field is community. Community. We need to reach out to others. We cannot understand this sitting in a room alone. We need to get out and talk to people, and we need to share life experiences, and we need to hear other people's stories. Because that's how they influence us. That's how they have an impact on us. We need to interact, because none of us can experience everything in one lifetime. So the only way, see, when you invest money, there are, you know, I have a calculator at the website called the Scenario Surfer. And the idea there is, I won't go into the details of the calculator, but the idea there is that there are a multitude of possible scenarios. We don't know which scenarios are going to turn up in our lives. We don't know. There is no way to know. The idea of the calculator is, why don't you try a number of scenarios and then gain confidence over time that you can handle any of them. You can handle scenario A or scenario B or scenario C, and whatever turns up, you're going to be able to face it. Well, that's the benefit of sharing your investing strategies and your investing experiences in a community of other investors. They have had different experiences than you. And you can learn from how they dealt with their experiences, both when they did good things and when they did bad things, how you should respond to various scenarios. But what the conventional advice too often becomes is just, here's the textbook answer on how you're supposed to respond. And the textbook answers just are often too artificial. They can't look at all the possible scenarios. They can't look at all the combinations. So they have a couple rules. You know, they call them rules of thumb or whatever. And when it comes time to apply them, they don't work. You know, I don't want to go on and on about this, but a perfect example of this, I just did a podcast a couple days ago on Bill Bangin. And it just, every time I think about it, it makes my brain want to explode. But Bill is one of the old school safe withdrawal rate researchers. And the whole theory, the old school safe withdrawal rate studies are rooted in the passive investing model. And the idea is you have to stick with your stock allocation no matter what. And I don't know how long Bill has been doing this, but he mentioned that I think his study came out in 1994, I think he said. So let's say from 1994. Well, from 1994 forward, Bill has never lived through a stock crash. So he never tested whether, you know, he had, I'm not saying this is a criticism of him, but he never tested whether he had the ability, let's say, or he had what it took. You know, I don't mean that to sound pejorative, but he never tested whether he had what it took to stick with a stock allocation through a price crash. So he, you know, he generated this retirement study assuming that. He just assumed it. But when it came to a test in the real world, he himself failed the test, according to the passive investing mindset. Now, I'm not sure Bill did the wrong thing. You can argue it two ways. I you know, he got out of stocks. He's recommended that his clients get out of stocks in total. And he would argue he argues that he hasn't violated any of the rules of passive investing because he says he got out for some sort of special reason, that the risk is more than he can understand or whatever. But the point is, people always have a reason why they get out of stocks. That's not anything new. There's always some rationale. The point is the artificial exercise of calculating the safe withdrawal rate as if people are never going to change their stock allocations after a price crash, it's unrealistic. It's artificial. It's phony. And I'm not, you know, I do not mean to single out Bill Bengen. I'm grateful to him that he shared some thoughts on why he did what he did. And as I say, and I have to listen to the full podcast, if you will. That was called Retirement Planning Today is a Sick Joke. But I say, Bill saved his clients a lot of money. I'm not saying he did all wrong. He said he got out of stocks. He only lost one third of what most have lost. So I'm sure his clients are very happy with him. But I don't think it's a good long-term strategy. I don't think he's mastered the subject any more than the passive investors have. I think his reaction is really just a form of passive investing. It's the other side of the emotional coin. But the point here is, what I'm trying to do, I can't change what happened with Bill Bengen. It already happened. But there are future Bill Bengens putting forward retirement planning strategies today, and I want them to think about this emotional side of the question, so that when they come up with studies, they are rooted in real life considerations, not like these old school safe withdrawal rate studies. I'm trying to change that. And I think what you have to do is realize that investing is not a solo act. It is an act done in a community. We are all influenced by what other people say about stocks. It's a community act. So when other people think stocks are good, and that's usually when prices are high, we're going to be tempted to think stocks are good. And if you want to invest effectively, you're going to have some counters to that. You're going to have something on the other side helping you not to be pulled in. And, you know, that's the rational investing model. The whole rational investing model aims to create those counters so that your emotions are always balanced. And the passive investing model just ignores those realities. Point number four is that love is not an intellectual act. If you watch comedies, the joke is always that opposites attract. Love is not rational in a strict sense. It's not logical, let's say. That would be the right way to put it. Love is not logical. I would argue that reason is not logical. That's why I call the approach to investing that I advocate the rational approach. Not that it's all logical. It's not. Excess logic is ultimately irrational. It really is. When you try to become a computer with legs, you are acting in a way in which doesn't work in the real world. Truth, I have found truth is almost always paradoxical. The greatest truths of life are paradoxical. And that is true of investing. I have I can't list them all, but one of the many paradoxes I've discovered is I'm a big believer in buy and hold investing. But buy and hold, it's a wonderful concept. And I'll discuss it more later on in this podcast, but the big problem with buy and hold is that people just jumped on the idea that what buy and hold means is sticking to the same stock allocation. Paradoxically, that's the worst thing you can do. What you want to do, you have to say, what is it I want to buy and hold? What is it I want to hold? What you want to hold is to the same risk level. And holding to the same risk level means changing your stock allocation when stocks go to insanely high price levels. So it's paradoxical. On the one hand, you want to buy and hold. On the other hand, you need to change your allocation at appropriate times. So there's paradox there. And I have found in life that all great truths have their paradoxical side to them. And that's true in investing. So you can't just take this logical approach. You can't just say, well, buy and hold, same allocation. And then what people do is, once they say they're going to stick to the same allocation, all of their energies are devoted to justifying that decision. I see so much wasted human energy in this field that it just makes you want to cry. I would say that 90% of the human energy devoted to understanding investing is not directed to trying to understand it, but to trying to not understand it. Most of our energy goes to avoiding the realities, not seeking them out. Because we're all trying to stick with some vow we've taken in our head. You know, we've said, I'm going to stick with this stock allocation, come thick or thin. And then all this reality comes flooding in, telling us it's a bad idea. And we have to come up with stranger and more convoluted rationalizations for not doing that. And we can spend lifetimes doing that. It's very sad. But love, you see, is not an intellectual act. And the reason why opposites attract is that a woman can see in a man things that others would not be aware of. And a man can see in a woman things that others would not be aware of. You know, this whole concept of love at first sight. Well, what's going on with love at first sight is that we are seeing things that aren't in an obvious sense there. They're not obviously there, but they are there. You know, intuition. Intuition is not, it's not a false thing. Intuition is more powerful than intellect. It's important. It's important in love and it's important in investing. If you have a feeling about your investing strategy, I am not one to tell you that you should ignore it. Some people will say, oh, I've had people say this, that, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, they said, I have a feeling stocks are not the place to be. Stocks are not where I should be. Some listened to those feelings and some didn't. But those feelings were caused by something. Now, I don't say that you should go along with every feeling that passes through your head. But what I say is that when you have a feeling like that, it means something. You should try to get to the bottom of it. Is it a feeling where your intuition is telling you something that your brain won't let in because it conflicts with your investing strategy? You need to be open to intuition. And that's something we should learn from having experienced love and how love can get us through life. Love can teach us how to invest effectively. Love can teach us the power of intuition over intellect. Point five is that love endures. True love. True love is long-term. That's why I say I'm a big fan of buy and hold investing, you know, when properly implemented. True love endures. So a loving approach to investing is not a short-term timing approach to investing. And of course, the big flaw, I won't go into too much detail, but the big flaw with passive investing is it claims to be a long-term strategy. But yet passive investors spend all of their time and energy looking at how stocks are doing in the short term. I see this all the time. But a truly loving investing strategy would be one that is long term. And I believe the valuation informed indexing approach is more of a long term approach than the passive indexing approach. Because with valuation informed indexing, you think of yourself as earning money, earning returns, not only when stocks are going up, but also when stocks are going down. And that's reality. When stock prices are going down, you are earning returns. Because every time stock prices go down, the long-term return for stocks goes up. So you are essentially locking in future returns with every price drop. I think that's the secret to becoming a long-term investor. That's the secret to becoming a long-term lover of stocks. And that's true. I have found that to be true in my marriage. You know, I love my wife more today than I loved her on the day I married her. There's no question about it. And, you know, people could look at it and say, you know, she's we don't look the same, you know. I've lost my hair and I've gained weight. My wife looks better than I do, I think, but she's not what she was on the day we met. But I can I can see things in her because of what we've lived through that I couldn't see on the day I met her. And so the intensity of my love is much greater because of those experiences. So, you know, it's love endures. My love was never rooted in these surface things. Or another way of saying it is that my appreciation of the surface things is ignited. It's driven by other things. Again, it has to do with practicality. Some would say, well, that's not practical. That's mushy. But I don't think so. It's real. That's why people really love. When someone says, you know, of their wife, you know, she's the most beautiful woman in the world, do they really think that she's the most beautiful woman in the world in an objective sense? You know, it's awful coincidental that, you know, millions of men all happen to marry the most beautiful woman in the world. But many people who say that are quite sincere. They see beauty in the person. And all of the beauty they see translates into an appreciation of the physical beauty. So, you know, that may seem far removed from the subject of investing, but I don't think it's as far removed as you might at first think. You have to learn, if you want to be a long-term investor, you have to learn to see beauty in your stock investment at all times. And as a rational investor, as a valuation-informed indexer, I can see that. When prices go down, I see the good in it. I rejoice in it because I'll be buying stocks for many years to come and I'll be buying them at lower prices. And I know that lower prices translate into higher returns. And so I see beauty in stocks both in bull markets and in bear markets. And so I believe that because I see that, if I didn't see that beauty, I couldn't love stocks. I couldn't stick with stocks. I couldn't be a buy and hold investor. Just as if I did not see the beauty in my wife, you know, it would be harder to stay married. But seeing it, truly seeing it and feeling it, and you can't force that. You can't force it. But if you truly feel it and see it, it really helps. It really helps a relationship. And the answer is not to wait until the relationship is in trouble to begin seeing it. You have to lay that groundwork. And of course, in order to lay the groundwork, you have to be willing to look at these things and talk about these things and learn about these things. Point number six, love is honest. I have a dedication to, well, it was an acknowledgement. It wasn't a dedication. I dedicated my first book, Passion Saving, to the nuns who taught me back in grade school. But the acknowledgement, you know, I acknowledged many people, but the last acknowledgement was to my wife. But the words that I said, I didn't want to say something phony. You know, there's a temptation. And but what I said was, I tried to say something about my wife that I really feel. And I said, she is the one that when I was talking about these ideas, the passion saving ideas, she is the one I could count on for straight talk responses. And she is. She will, you know, she doesn't flatter me. And you know, you could say, oh, of all the people in the world, the one who should flatter you is your wife. Well, I think not. I would say anyone can flatter you. A salesman can flatter me. You know, I go in to buy a suit and the salesman's going to flatter me. But my wife is the person who can tell the truth because she loves me. So that's how I feel about investing. If you love stocks, you will be honest about them. I'm famous for telling the truth about stock investing. I do it, and you know, people who are living illusions, people who are trying to persuade themselves that valuations don't affect long-term returns, become angry with me. Many, many people have become angry with me because I will just say flatly, you know, I used to point out, I can't do it anymore, but I used to point out, you know, when we were at the price levels we were at from 1995 through the first part of 2008, I would tell people, there have been three times when we've been at these price levels before, and the average price drop is 68% on those three times. So what do you think's going to happen? And you know, they would get angry. Some people would get angry. Some people would be grateful. But, you know, that's truth-telling. Scott Burns, in a famous quote, said, the reason that the experts have not told us about the flaws in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies is, it is information most people don't want to hear. That's not love, is it? Scott Burns is a wonderful columnist, but if he loved his subject enough, I believe he would tell the truth as he knows it, and fully, and he wouldn't worry about it hurting people's feelings. You know, you can't help but worry about it. I mean, you can't worry, you can't help but temper your comments, and I do that as well. But you have to find a way. And I'm not, again, as I said with Bengen, I'm not faulting Scott. It's not the point. The point is that Scott faces these pressures, and he shouldn't be facing these pressures. And if we're going to change the world so that he doesn't face them in the future, the answer is love. That's how we get there. We tell Scott that he needs to love more. He needs to love enough to tell us the truth. We need to love investing enough to hear the truth and not to become angry at Scott when he tells us what he needs to tell us. Love is the answer. Love is the answer to this problem. We can't invest well if the investors don't tell us how stock investing really works. And the experts are not going to tell us how stock investing really works until we have a better understanding of how stock investing works. It's all circular. But the way we cut this circle of impotence is with love. That's how we break through. That's how we break through. Point seven, true love deepens over time. I make this point about rational investing all the time. The biggest argument that is used, that some people use when I tell people how valuations affect long-term returns, people will say, well, we're hardwired to invest emotionally. Rob, you can't change that. You can't change that. I say it's not so. But it's true that you can't change it in a day. You can't change it with a snap of your fingers. We are hardwired to invest emotionally. That is true. But what I have found is when you learn the realities of investing and you start to adopt those realities, you sort of fall in love with them. Over time, you become more and more confident, because with passive investing, you're always insecure because passive investing doesn't make sense. The idea that you wouldn't have to change your allocation with changes in prices just doesn't make any sense. It's crazy. price matters in anything we buy in this world. How could it not matter with stocks? So no one can ever have confidence in the passive investing model. But in the rational investing model, the longer you work it, the more confident you feel. Because in the beginning, you're sort of tentative. You're saying, well, I'm doing this thing. It makes sense, but nobody else seems to think it does, and the experts sure don't like it. And, you know, you're very tentative. You're very unsure. You're on shaky ground. But as you use it, and as stocks, lo and behold, perform in the real world just as your common sense says they should, you grow more and more confident. Love deepens over time. You know, I'm not advocating, you know, infatuation is not love. I'm not advocating infatuation. I'm advocating love. Love is something that doesn't fade over time, but deepens over time. Point number 8, love is not porn, or is not to be confused with porn. You know, there's a phrase we have in the personal finance field, investing porn. Porn is something that applies to weakness. You know, there's a reason why people look at porn, right? There's a reason. We all have the human weakness that makes us predisposed to it. There's a reason why people fall for the idea of passive investing. We all have a get-rich-quick mentality. We all have it. Don't think you're above it. So, porn is a substitute for love. You know, it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing at all. It's a shallow imitation. The passive investing understanding of how stock investing works is a shallow imitation of the reality. It's shallow. It's these rules. You know, they've got 5 rules you've got to follow, and instant presto, all your investing troubles are over. Anything that comes off, you know, as too easy to believe is probably not, you shouldn't believe it. Passive investing just doesn't pass the smell test. Just doesn't stand up to scrutiny. It's shallow. Shallow. Much of it is on the right track. And in a sense, of course, porn is on the right track. You know, the idea of going out to meet a woman is a good idea. The problem is there's a real way to do it, and there's an imitation fake way to do it. And the fake imitation way is never going to bring you lasting fulfillment. You want to search for love, not porn. You want to search for investing realities, not slogan, not marketing slogans. You know, timing never works is a marketing slogan. It's not real. It's not real. It's porn. Point 9, love is happy. That's a nice one. I got excited when I saw that one coming up. John Walter Russell signs off all of his posts at discussion boards with the phrase, have fun. I always like that. Because that's what our investing discussions should be about. They should be bright. They should be cheerful. They should be happy. When I don't see that, when I see nastiness, when I see sarcasm, when I see put-downs, when I see people calling investors who are lowering their stock allocations dumb, stupid, losers, when I see people mocking other people, that gives me the creeps. That's a turn off. So if you see that in discussion boards, then subtract points from those people and subtract points from their investing philosophy too. That's the key, because it's a sign of a weak investing philosophy that it would lead to that sort of behavior. Love is happy. And any investing philosophy that's going to work in the long term should be a happy investing philosophy. Point 10, love is kind and empathetic. Love is not angry. You know, that goes to the point there that I was making above about, well, it goes to several points made above. We need to reach out to others. I have found, you know, people will say on discussion boards, how can it be worth your time to share ideas when you're not paid? Well, when you share ideas, you get You get into discussions where you learn. You become challenged. And you learn and you sharpen your thinking. Sharing. Sharing. That's what love is all about, isn't it? Isn't love finding out that being selfish isn't the answer in life? You know, you could think about it just from a financial standpoint. You could say, if I never fell in love, I would never have to buy a house, and I would never have to have children, and I'd never have to worry about this other person getting sick, and I might have to help them financially or whatever. Yeah, but your life would be empty. And ultimately, you end up making more money because you become so inspired by this person you love that you go out and you fight the world 10 times harder than you otherwise would have. Love is about sharing. Love is not about giving up selfishness. Love is about reaching out to others. Love is about empathy. Love is about kindness. It's about getting out of your own private self. Point number 11, love is humble. You know, become a parent and you're awed by the immense responsibility, and it's humbling. You know, you might have, by the time you become a parent, you might have mastered a job, and you might think, hey, you know, I know how to drive, you know, I know how to make money, I can provide for myself, I know how to pick a movie to go to, you know, I've got my act together, I know how to dress myself. And then all of a sudden you've got a kid, And you're awed by the responsibility. Love is humbling because there are responsibilities that go with love. And investing should be a humble act. Probably my biggest gripe with the conventional advice, or let's call it the conventional approach to investing, is these dogmatic claims that are made because they're lacking in humility. And, you know, this stuff is ever present. It's reached omnipresent. It's reached a point where it's expected in the investing field. I think people just tune it out. If people use the tone of voice that I often hear in investing in other fields, people would just say, yuck, what a turnoff. But somehow, when it's said in the investing realm, people think it's okay. They applaud it. One of the things I try to do, you know, I'll say that often in post. When somebody says something yucky, I'll just say yuck. In other words, I don't give a big, long, blown-out argument. I'm just like, yuck. Because that's an appropriate response. It's a response we would have in other fields. Love is humble. So an investing expert is humble. A true expert is humble. And, you know, when I use the word expert in quotes, some investing experts are offended by that. Like, you know, they don't want their expertise to be questioned. Well, guess what? A true expert questions his own expertise. A true expert is always trying to learn and is always aware of the need to learn. Point 12, love is brave. A phenomenon I've talked about before is that, As I've discovered all I know about investing during the 6.5 years of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate, and there have been turning points. There have been days when I was on the verge of saying something, and I hesitated. You know, I'm not sure because all these people are telling me I'm wrong. And I would work up the courage, and I've always found it to be a liberating feeling, always. It's a liberating feeling to just tell the truth. A big example of that was the first time I used the phrase analytically invalid to describe the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. It took a long time to work up the courage to do that. And of course, as soon as I said it, I knew it was true. I mean, I knew it was true long before. I was just afraid to say it. But once I said it, I'm like, well, now I've said it. Can't take it back. You start going down a new path. And of course, from saying that the old school studies were analytically invalid, I next got to the point where I had to say, wait a minute, timing works. Long-term timing works. That was one I was reluctant to say because I don't believe in short-term timing. So it was hard for me to say that long-term timing works. But once you found that the old school studies were analytically invalid, you had to engage in predicting returns in order to calculate the safe withdrawal rate accurately. And once you predict returns, it's clear that timing works, long-term timing. And of course, at some point, after finding that long-term timing works and that the quote-unquote experts don't acknowledge that, you got to a point where you said, these experts aren't really experts. And then you got to a point where you said, passive investing doesn't work. The dominant model doesn't work. All of these things were developed. I didn't discover this stuff sitting in a room somewhere thinking grand thoughts. I discovered it bit by bit, piece by piece. And each step on the logic chain took an act of courage. And what gave me the courage was my love for the subject and my love for my fellow community members. Love is brave. Point 13, love is intuitive. I talked about that a little bit under the point where I said how love is not an intellectual exercise. Love is intuitive. How many times, you're raising a child and you start to sense things, what they're doing or they're doing something wrong or they're doing something right. You develop an intuition about them. They're going to grow up to be such and such. And these intuitions you have are not stupid. They're actually very keen insights often. We need to listen. Love is more powerful than intellect. I'm going to say that again. So if you want to get your investing plan on track, start working the intuition. Stop trying to figure out the tables and the graphs and the logic chains and turn to your intuition a little bit. Point 14, love is not greedy. It's obviously a mistake to become excessively greedy in your investing strategies. We all want things. We all want things out of our lover. But if we demand too much, we drive the lover away. And if you demand more of investing than investing can give, you ruin the entire project. You get in over your head. So, the advice there is you don't go with a stock allocation higher than the one that you can stick with in the event of a worst case scenario. You need to think about what sort of price drop am I likely to see from the evaluation level that we're at a given time. And then you set your stock allocation so that you can withstand the worst that the market can dish out from that valuation level. If you don't do that, if you ignore the realities, you're essentially giving into greed. You're not living by love, you're living by greed. Point 15, love is ambitious. I talked about love being humble, but just because we're humble doesn't mean we're not ambitious. The rational investing approach is an ambitious approach. We aim to do some things that the conventional advice tells us we can't do. We can't pull off. We aim to time the market, not in the short term, but in the long term. How many times have we heard we can't time the market? But that doesn't stop us. Not if timing the market makes sense. Not if timing the market is necessary for our long-term success. We aim to beat the market. How many times have you heard you cannot beat the market? But it turns out that you can. You can beat the market, perhaps not intellectually. Perhaps you can't become smarter, than these super brains that manage these big funds. But you can sure become emotionally more advanced than them. It doesn't take much work to do that. It takes work, but it doesn't take intellect. It doesn't take work where they have an edge you can't overcome. All of us have common sense. All of us can get our emotions under control and exercise common sense and become more effective investors than the most effective investing experts out there. I had that podcast title where I said, I know more about investing than John Bogle, and you can too. I think that holds up. I don't know more about John Bogle because I've read more books than John Bogle or I've managed bigger funds than John Bogle, but I've studied a side of investing that John Bogle has not studied in great depth. And I've advanced beyond him, I believe. Please feel free to disagree, but that's my belief. I sincerely believe that. And I certainly don't mean to ridicule him by saying that. I would like John Bogle to join in the party. Very much. Very much. But I have to say what I believe. And while rational investing is a humble approach. It is also an ambitious approach. Love is balanced. Point 16. Love is balanced. I would say love is the only way out of the mess we are in today. I'll give you an example of balance. I've said before, you've heard me criticize bogleheads.org, that some of the owners, the leaders, the quote-unquote leaders of that board community are highly dogmatic passive investing enthusiasts. And that's a turnoff to me. And so, I say that because I think my listeners need to know it, and also because I think the people who are engaging in that behavior need to know it. I like those people. I care about those people. I want to get them more on the right track than they are today. And I don't think it's an act of kindness to just, keep that to myself. They may see it that way. They may wish I would keep it to myself. I don't doubt. But I don't think that's an act of kindness. I think ultimately they want to get it right. Ultimately they want to invest more effectively, and they want their board community to thrive. But the balance comes in. Something I will say today is that I've seen a good number of threads at that board, bogleheads.org, in recent weeks or recent months since the price crash that are top-notch stuff. And I am impressed. And, it wasn't always these owners or these leaders, quote-unquote leaders, who are participating in the threads, but they are permitting them. I would say they are running that board with a looser hand than they used to before the price crash. And that's a very positive sign. And they should be applauded. Now, I think that's balance. If I tilt emotionally, and I say, oh, they're bad, they're bad guys, then I lose the benefit of the insights that I could gain from reading those threads today. That's a tricky business. That's a tricky business. Achieving balance. See, it's not easy. So I don't mean to say that you can be smarter than John Bogle easily. It actually does take some work, but I say it can be done. And the work it takes is not intellectual work. The work it takes is emotional work. What you need to do is to practice achieving balance. And Bogle's a perfect example of it. It's another case of balance. Bogle is one of the smartest investing advisors out there. Bogle is the godfather of the rational investing approach that I advocate. I learned much of what I know today from John Bogle. There are some who think of me as like anti-Bogle, because I say passive investing is a failed model, a discredited model, and Bogle is Mr. Passive Investing. Well, guess what? John Bogle made a mistake. It would not be balanced of me to deny that mistake. Part of my job is to point that out. Part of my duty to myself, aside from my job to others, part of my duty to myself is to acknowledge that. And part of my duty to Bogle is to acknowledge it. I'm letting him down. I'm treating him with disrespect if I don't point out his mistakes. But the other part of my job is to acknowledge the good that he's done and the insights that he shared and the things that I've learned from him. So that's balance. If you want to learn how to invest effectively, you need to master the art of balance. And you'll never get it perfectly, you see. You'll never get it perfectly. But if you work it and if you're aware of the importance of it, you'll do better than if you're not. Point 17, love is flexible. I thought, I wrote this item down thinking about how things change over time. Probably the biggest problem with passive investing is its rigidity. They adopt one stock allocation and then they stick to it for life. And it reminds me of, there's a movie called Vertigo, an Alfred Hitchcock movie. And the man, Jimmy Stewart, there's a woman that he loves who dies because she falls from a high place, a tower, and he's not able to save her because he has vertigo. He gets dizzy when he climbs to heights, and this plagues him, the memory. And then he meets this other woman who looks similar, and he's trying to turn the new woman into the old woman. So he tries to get her to dress the same and put her hair the same and all this sort of thing, speak the same. And of course, it's sick. And she's trying to please him. She tries to go along with it to a point, but then, you know, she's repulsed by the sickness of it. He ultimately isn't in love with her. He's in love with this earlier woman who was a ghost, you know, who was dead. That's, you know, the movie is about love, and it's about how love becomes twisted. It's a twisted love. And that's what's going on with passive investing. It's a twisted love. This idea that there are good ideas there in passive investing, and that's what makes it so appealing. That's what makes many people feel love towards it. And the love in itself is healthy, just as Jimmy Stewart's desire for this woman is healthy. It's understandable, first of all, that he would love a woman, and it's understandable, secondly, that he would love that woman who he lost. I presume he had a genuine love. But that woman is gone, and he needs to accept that. And when conditions change, we need to accept that our stock allocation needs to change. You know, you can look at the stock return predictor, and it'll tell you that the most likely annualized 10-year return for stocks in 1982 was 17% real. The most likely 10-year annualized return for stocks in the year 2000 was a negative 1%. There's no way that anyone can make a sane case for having the same stock allocation at a time when the most likely return is 17% and at a time when the most likely return is a negative 1%. That just makes no sense. But this is what passive investing leads you to. It leads you to trying to recapture this moment in time. You know, if you invested in stocks in 1982, you undoubtedly had good feedback from that. You had good experiences. You had huge returns. But you can't relive that when we get to the valuation levels that applied in the late 1990s. So you need to give it up. You need to let it die. And that's how love works. We need to, you know, it's a pathetic thing. People who try to go back to their, you know, to their first date, just keep themselves frozen in time. You can't love, you know, I'm married to the same woman now for, you know, many years, but she's not exactly the same woman, and I'm not exactly the same man, and we cannot recreate what we had at an earlier time. We have to love each other in the present, as we are today. And as I say, I think what we are today is better, but of course there are some ways in which it's not better. We can't run together today. You know, my wife has a knee problem. So I used to love to go for long runs with her, and we'd have long conversations. Well, that's gone. Well, the same way, I may have had great times with a 70% stock allocation through the 1980s. I wasn't investing at that time, so I didn't, but I could have. But when the 1990s came, the late 1990s, a 70% allocation was no longer realistic. It was no longer reasonable. So you have to change. Love is not rigid. Love is flexible. Love is creative. And you know, love is obviously creative. You know, two people can create something that each alone did not have in a marriage. And of course, ultimately, we create children, which is the ultimate act of creation through love. But investing love is creative. That's part of, you know, what I'm, the message here that I'm pitching to you is that you can beat the market if you are a little creative. You can't beat the big name experts at the intellectual game. They've got the experience that you don't have, and they've got the book learning that you don't have. But you can beat them at the emotional game. A lot of the big name experts are clueless at the emotional game. I mean no disrespect, but I've seen things that shock and amaze me. A lot of them are flat out clueless when it comes to the emotional game. So spend a weekend learning about the emotional side of stock investing and enjoy better returns at lower risk for life. Not many people know about this stuff. It's a creative solution to the investing problem. A loving attitude will leave you open to creative solutions. Point number 19, I say love is constant, true. You know, the point I was making there is that I mentioned earlier, I'm a big fan of buy and hold. And buy and hold, when I hear the phrase buy and hold, see, I look at things from this emotional prism. And when I hear the phrase buy and hold, I think Fidelity. And of course, not Fidelity, the fund company. Fidelity in marriage. Buy and hold is lasting love. You know, I think of the Frank Sinatra song. I can't sing, but I gave a verse once before on a podcast, all the way. When somebody loves you, it's no good unless she loves you all the way. Through the good and lean years and all the in-between years, come what may. Who knows where the road will take us? Only a fool could say. Only a fool would say. That's buy and hold. Do you see? That's how to make... The song is about a marriage, but it's also about the buy and hold investing approach. We don't know where the road's going to lead us. But if we are... If we are in love, we will get through it. And... You know, love in the investing realm is constant and true. See, this is what I don't see from Bill Bengen, who has now sold his stocks, and I don't see it from John Bogle, who is telling people to hold their stocks, but who didn't tell them a year ago that stocks were dangerous and that they should lower their allocations. And so ultimately, it is Bogle's advice, and Bengen is a follower of passive investing. He's a follower of Bogle's advice in that respect. Ultimately, Bogle's advice will not work because it's not rooted in reality. So love is all these things at one time. You see, it's the honesty, and it's the happiness, and it's the fidelity, and it's the suffering, and it's all mixed together. And it's this powerful force. And this is the force you need working on your side and trying to achieve a true buy and hold strategy. Buy and hold can work. It's just, it's not as easy as it has been sold to you. Buy and hold is wonderful. The payoff is huge. But it's not as simple as just saying the words buy and hold and taking a vow never to change your stock allocation. There's more to it than that. That's a trivial view of what's involved, and we need to go deeper. We shouldn't be shocked that Bogle got it wrong the first time through. How many first drafts have errors in them? I do think we should be appalled that so many have gone along with the flawed approach and not done more to fix it. But we can't change that, but we should work to fix it today. We should work to do what we can. And we should work, let it be said, in a spirit of love. You know, we should, the last point, the 20th point, is love is young at heart. Love is young at heart, and you know, there's all sorts of things that go with that. Love is generous spirited, love is forgiving, love is adventure loving, all these things. So we don't, you know, we don't carry grudges, we are not critical. Lovers, rational investors are not critical of others. Except where being critical serves, except where we are required to be critical in order to honor our love. In other words, I love John Bogle. So if I love the man, I love what he's contributed. If I love the man and I respect his contribution, I don't keep my mouth shut when I see him making an error that's going to cause, you know, millions of people to suffer busted retirements. I speak up out of love. But if someone, and I follow that up by trying to develop strategies that that make Bogle's ideas work in the real world, because the goal is not to, the goal is not to celebrate Bogle's deficiencies. The goal is to bring him to an even higher level that is, you know, that his ideas have never achieved before. And the truth is, I believe, valuation-informed indexing is the next stage of the indexing revolution. It works. There are many people who thought that passive indexing worked. It's now revealed to us that it does not. But we build on what we were given. And I think that's a young at heart approach to the subject. And I think of Bogle as being young at heart. One of the things that was said to me when I put up I didn't put it up at the Vanguard Diehards board, but I wrote an article at the site, Bogle's Big Mistake, and somebody linked to it over there. And, people were saying, oh, Rob, you're so mean to John Bogle. He's a nice man. I don't buy it. I think he's a nice man. But I think he's a nice man who deserves to see his work be a success. And, you know, I'm helping him make it a success by offering some ideas for changing what's wrong with the first draft. That's how I look at it. So, I look at it in what I hope is a young spirit. So, that's the idea. You know, I've gone through 20 items where approaching investing questions with a spirit of love makes the difference between success and failure. And these are the kind of ideas I want to explore more as we get deeper into our understanding of what rational investing is really all about. Good luck with your investing strategy.